Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The UN Secretary General has strongly condemned the unconstitutional change of government in Niger announced on Thursday by military officers. His spokesperson, Stephane Dujarric, said that Mr. Guterres has been deeply disturbed by the detention of President Mohamed Bazoum and remains concerned for his safety and well-being. Describing the development on Wednesday as a deplorable act, the UN chief called for the president's immediate and unconditional release and for democratic principles to prevail in Niger. Mr. Guterres also urged all parties to refrain from violence and to respect the rule of law. Echoing the UN chief's comments, human rights chief Volker Turk said that it was in the interests of all the people of Niger that the important democratic gains made in recent years were safeguarded and preserved. This July is set to be the hottest month on record, the UN World Meteorological Organization said on Thursday. The announcement follows a report from the European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service, which also declared the first 21 days of July as the warmest three-week period on record. The temperatures have been characterized by intense heat waves in large parts of North America, Asia and Europe. Along with wildfires in countries including Canada and Greece, the searing conditions have had major impacts on people's health, the environment and economies. In response to July's record temperatures, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Thursday urged countries to do more to respond to the climate crisis. In Geneva, the head of the UN World Meteorological Organization, Petteri Talas, said that the need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions was more urgent than ever before. Climate action is not a luxury but a must, he warned. Finally, to the Korean Peninsula, where UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called for a surge in diplomacy for peace. Mr. Guterres' message comes as the UN marks the 70th anniversary of the Korean War Armistice Agreement. The treaty brought the devastating war on the peninsula to an end, serving as a legal foundation for the preservation of peace and stability. The UN chief warned that the region remains divided, with geopolitical tensions on the rise due to nuclear threats and the erosion of respect for international norms. He urged the resumption of regular diplomatic contacts and for the nurturing of an environment conducive to dialogue. The goals remain clear, Mr. Guterres said, sustainable peace and the complete and verifiable denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Katie Dartford, UN News.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas. Your one true voice in Kansas. This is the Radio Free Kansas.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
Why do evangelicals hate the new Barbie movie?
This week, we remember nationally known skeptic Jim Haught, 91. Then we'll talk with Colorado Springs activist Rob Rogers,
who in the face of book bannings has called for banning the Bible.
Boy, I tell you, Bob and Amy up there in Madison, Wisconsin at Free Thought, the Freedom from Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin has really put out a great show for you today. I'm your host, Mike Adell, and as usual, we have a busy schedule today, a busy playlist to give you. Boy, it is some kind of weather out here. It is now 94 degrees at the noon and here in Northeast Kansas, and it's supposed to get up to 100 with a heat index of about 105. I was thinking earlier today about how the language has changed, our language here in mid-America, about a heat dome. I mean, that's what, I mean, none of our weather primetime weather people or licensed meteorologists use the word climate change yet on their broadcasts and on television, let alone radio. I mean, it's starting to, that those two words, climate change, are starting to be used, but not on the licensed meteorologist, our weather, who do the media on the locally. They are, it's like a third rail, like they're committing professional career suicide if they use those words, because they're so terrified of the MAGA maggots. They're so terrified. They're actually, they may not be, but their program editors, their bosses, and of course they're the people who sell advertising to fill up the ad space on their television stations. Those people who buy the ad, who sell the ads, and the people who are the managers of the programming are afraid of losing that revenue. That's what it's been for the last 20 years. And I noticed the words heat dome. Those are the words that have snuck through. Now it's a heat dome. And it's very interesting to see how this change is occurring, whether we like it or not. I mean, in New York, the Michigan Peninsula, Chicago, they're already seeing it in the haze from the Canadian wildfires and their pollution, air pollution. I mean, it's just obvious. Even here, there's a haze on certain days when there's... Now, we're fortunate. We're getting 16 mile per hour steady wind from the south, which is really... coming from where? Oklahoma, Arizona, you know, New Mexico. We're getting like a blast furnace coming up from the south, which is hotter than there, if you can imagine that, from heat dome to heat dome. It's really unusual to watch this and see if the people in MAGA country, M-A-G-A country, are going to come to grips with this reality that is here. I'm sure by winter, in just 3 short months, they'll be saying, well, see, it went away. It's not that bad anymore. We'll see. Because right now, I'll tell you, the corn and soybean crops all around me out here in northeast Kansas, Jefferson County, are going bananas. They look beautiful. I mean, it's just aesthetically beautiful to see that all the nice, neat, tall rows of crops all carefully planted. But we did get a lot of rain this early June. And, well, through June, July, we've been monsooned. And now the heat has really kicked in. And it's going to be that way all week. And look, it used to be 10 years ago, August was this kind of weather. August. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But it's interesting to see how our weather forecasters are now using Doppler radar to tell us about the heat domes around the United States, but not using the word climate change. Very interesting. Study it yourself. Watch your local weather. See if they ever mention climate change. Now, maybe on the East and West Coast, they're not afraid of it as much. They're more reality-oriented advertising. The worst thing that ever comes out. You don't hear a lot of that here. We don't have any paid advertisements on Radio Free Kansas. Never will either, by the way. Any advertising you hear is put in by the BTR Radio Network, and I have stipulated that can only be done at the beginning of the show. And that's the corporate part of it. That's Blog Talk Radio, putting ads. I don't let them put ads in our shows. We don't have advertisements. I endorse certain things. I let people know about them that I think are pertinent to people in Kansas. But no. We don't take any money for advertisements. Nope, we do it all here. And, you know, that's what's coming up Bob and Amy in Madison, Wisconsin, Pre-Thought Radio. And yes, I did hustle around this morning and get you the headlines from Democracy Now. So you'll hear that next, then Free Thought Radio, then This Way Out, the long-running news radio news magazine for the LPBQ. people out there. So it's Free Thought Friday here on Radio for Kansas, and there is a great abolitionist hour coming up tomorrow on Radio Free Kansas on Saturday. This is your lunchtime listening post. And the world is bigger than all, than us, you and I. So we need to know about it. And there's nobody in Kansas telling you this. Enjoy. Tristan, move on to Democracy Now. Thank you, listeners.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Federal prosecutors have filed new charges against former President Donald Trump and another one of his aides in the indictment around his mishandling of classified documents. The charges accuse Trump of attempting to, quote, alter, destroy, mutilate, or conceal evidence, unquote, and inducing others to do so. Prosecutors also added a new count under the Espionage Act for showing classified national security materials to visitors to his Bedminster Golf Club. The revised indictment states Trump and Mar-a-Lago property manager Carlos de Oliveira pressured the director of IT at Trump's Florida estate to delete security camera footage so it could not be seen by a federal grand jury. According to the indictment, de Oliveira said, quote, the boss wanted the server deleted. De Oliveira is also accused of lying to federal investigators when he denied having knowledge of boxes of documents stashed at Mar-a-Lago. Prosecutors contend De Oliveira oversaw and even helped move the boxes alongside Trump aide Walt Nauta, who has already been indicted. This superseding indictment is not to be confused with a possible third indictment against Trump related to his efforts to overturn the 2020 election, for which Trump's lawyers met with special counsel Jack Smith's office Thursday. New climate data show July is on track to become the hottest month in human history, with global temperatures rising to about 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit above pre-industrial levels. On Thursday, the head of the World Meteorological Organization said climate action is not a luxury, but a must, while UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres scolded world leaders over inaction on the climate.
Climate change is here, it is terrifying, and it is just the beginning. The era of global warming has ended. The era of global boiling has arrived. The air is unbreathable, the heat is unbearable, and the level of fossil fuel profits and climate inaction is unacceptable.
The UN's warning came as hundreds of wildfires fueled by record heat continue to burn out of control around the Mediterranean. In Algeria, Croatia, France, Greece, Italy, Portugal, Spain, Tunisia, and Turkey. In China, Typhoon Doksuri made landfall today in the southeastern Fujian province, sparking fires, downing power lines, and shuttering schools and businesses. On Thursday, the storm lashed southern Taiwan after battering the northern Philippines, where it killed at least 39 people. Here in the United States, over 170 million people are under extreme heat alerts as sweltering temperatures spread across the country. On Thursday, President Biden announced a series of measures to tackle the impacts of the extreme heat.
We should be protecting workers from hazardous conditions, and we will. And those states where they do not, I'm going to be calling them out, where they refuse to protect these workers in this awful heat.
But Biden made no mention of the fossil fuel industry's role in the climate crisis and continued to ignore calls from climate activists and scientists to declare a climate emergency. We'll speak with Congressmember Greg Kassar, who went on a thirst strike this week in Washington, D.C. In more climate news, the Supreme Court has cleared the way for construction of the contested Mountain Valley pipeline to resume. The court on Thursday lifted a halt on a section of the project that had been issued by a lower court earlier this month after a challenge by environmental groups. Leaders of Niger's military have declared their support for the mutinous officers who declared a coup Wednesday against the nation's democratically elected president, Mohamed Bazoum. 2 days after members of his own presidential guard deposed him, President Bazoum has refused to step down. It's not clear who's currently running Niger's government. On Thursday, supporters of the coup set fire to the headquarters of Bazoum's governing party. Meanwhile, The Intercept reports a leader of the attempted coup was trained by the U.S. military at the Army base formerly known as Fort Benning, named after a Confederate general, which was recently renamed Fort Moore. Just last month, coup leader and Brigadier General Moussa Salo Barmo met with the head of U.S. Army Special Operations Command, Lieutenant General Jonathan Braga, at a U.S. drone base in Niger. African officers trained by the U.S. military have taken part in 11 coups in West Africa since 2008. The World Health Organization is warning of a growing health crisis for the 3.4 million people forced to flee fighting in Sudan, with rising rates of infectious diseases reported among displaced populations. Heavy fighting continues to rage in the capital, Khartoum, where airstrikes and artillery fire have killed at least 16 civilians this week. In Sudan's western Darfur region, a leader of the Masalit community says more than 10,000 people have been killed in the past 2 months. More than 300,000 people, the vast majority of the Masalit, have fled across the border into neighboring Chad. Refugees describe a harrowing journey to escape attacks by militias and fighters with the rapid support forces.
I've been here for 13 days, and the people we left behind were killed in their homes. There are others who are trapped there, and the road remains unsafe. If there are three or four people, they'll kill them and take their belongings.
Russian President Vladimir Putin welcomed African leaders to St. Petersburg for the annual Africa-Russia summit, coming just days after the Kremlin pulled out of the Black Sea grain deal that allowed safe passage of shipments of food and fertilizer from Ukraine. Heads of state from 17 African countries joined this year's gathering, down from 43 African leaders who attended in 2019. Putin said Russia will be able to replace Ukrainian grain exports and promise free shipments of food to six African nations.
Our country can replace Ukrainian grain both commercially and as a free aid to the poorest countries in Africa, especially as we are again expecting a record harvest this year.
Russian President Putin also pledged to consider a peace plan from African leaders to end the Ukraine war. Among those spotted on the sidelines of the summit was the leader of the Wagner group of Russian mercenaries, Yevgeny Prigozhin, who was photographed shaking hands with a senior ambassador from the Central African Republic. It was the first time Prigozhin has appeared publicly inside Russia since he led a failed revolt against Russia's military in June. The United States Senate has approved the largest military budget in history. Its passage sets up a partisan clash with the Republican majority in the House of Representatives, which narrowly approved a military budget packed with anti-abortion and anti-LGBTQIA amendments. On Thursday, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer called passage of the Senate's $886 billion National Defense Authorization Act, quote, a glimmer of hope for the American people.
And a bipartisan process is precisely what the American people are yearning for. In a fractured Congress, Democrats, Republicans coming together to provide something as critical as our national defense.
Just 11 senators voted against the record military budget, 6 Democrat, 4 Republican, and Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders. Senators overwhelmingly rejected an amendment offered by Sanders that would have slashed the military budget by 10%. Ahead of the vote, Sanders said the U.S. should prioritize spending on health care and social programs over a bloated military budget.
Unbelievably, our life expectancy is actually declining. Our child care system is dysfunctional. Millions of parents unable to find affordable sites for their kids. We have a major housing crisis. 600,000 Americans are homeless. And, oh, yes, the planet is on fire, and the world we are leaving future generations will be increasingly unhealthy. But somehow, we never have enough money to address those crises.
In El Salvador, human rights advocates are warning of severe due process violations after lawmakers approved the use of mass trials for the tens of thousands of people who've been arrested under President Nayib Bukele's brutal crackdown on gangs. Salvadoran officials said up to 900 defendants could be prosecuted at one time. El Salvador has been under a state of exception for 16 months, suspending several constitutional protections and leading to the arbitrary detention of over 70,000 people without access to legal representation or fair trials. Meanwhile, Honduras is planning to build an island prison to detain hundreds of suspected gang leaders. This comes after President Xiomara Castro earlier this month approved another extension of a state of emergency that's been in place since last year to tackle gang violence. In Ecuador, authorities have recovered the remains of people killed during a prison riot over the weekend in the city of Guayaquil. At least 31 people were reported dead, but the toll could be higher. Ecuador's prison system has been plagued with violence and abuse, with prisoners facing overcrowded and squalid conditions. President Guillermo Lasso has declared a state of emergency in Ecuador in prisons. Over 400 people have died in prison riots in Ecuador since 2021. Back in the United States, data shows the rate of gun suicides among black teens has topped the rate among white teens for the first time, as gun suicides reached an all-time high last year. The data compiled by the Centers for Disease Control also shows black children and teens have a gun homicide rate 20 times higher than white children and teens. Guns remain the leading cause of death for children and teens, with the rate of gun deaths among minors soaring by 87% over the last decade. Last year, over 48,000 people in the United States died from guns, an average of one person every 11 minutes. And in Texas, the Houston Independent School District's eliminating librarian positions at 28 schools in the upcoming school year and will replace some libraries with so-called team centers, essentially disciplinary centers for students. The widely blasted move comes after state Republicans forcibly took over the Houston Independent School District earlier this year. Those most affected will be children of color in lower-income areas. Meanwhile, two Texas bookstores and three national bookseller associations have sued over a Texas bill requiring private booksellers to rate books based on levels of, quote, appropriateness, and banning, quote, sexually explicit material from libraries. Valerie Kohler is the owner of the Blue Willow Bookshop in Houston, a co-plaintiff in the lawsuit.
We're not going to read them all. And for us to have to rate them, I think, sends a message to the librarians and to the students that you're allowed to read this, you're not allowed to read that.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is Carl G. from the Abolitionist Hour, every Saturday, 12 p.m., where we broadcast the news that you won't find on cable. Ever wonder what Gen Z is up to? Have you heard of Generation U? Ever wonder why the old geezers are excited that something's going on since their days of living underground and avoiding the Vietnam draft? We cover these topics on the Abolitionist Hour, and we kind of give you updates on the front, whether it's Atlanta, Minneapolis, St. Louis, Kansas City. We'll keep you updated on news and information on the state of dismal prison conditions and why the Jackson County Jail is not just a stockade. It's a phone company. So join us at the Abolitionist Hour, only on Blog Talk Radio, 12 p.m. Central Standard Time. We'll see you there.
And from the plains of Wyoming, drunk men came hurrying through. Well, Britannia's Huns with her long-range guns came in through the foggy tears.
Back to the glen I rode again, and my heart with grief was sore. For I parted them with valiant home I never shall see more.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to the 900th episode of Free Thought Radio, and that is 30 squared. And we're very proud that we have actually had 900 individual non-repeated shows. They've all been unique. Once in a while, we have included the same segment, a rare occasion, part of a very special interview, but they've all been 900 unique shows.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Our first show was back in April 2006. And this is the July 27th, 2023 show. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And again, we got Grant Blaschka in the studio. Grant's doing the engineering in there, I hope you're pushing all the right buttons there, Grant. Grant is one of the amazing engineers at the Studio Audio for the Arts that we get to use, but Grant's been our main one for the last, two or three years now. And our studio here is called the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio, which is in the building called Free Thought Hall, which is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
The Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And regular listeners do know, probably, that we have two purposes: to educate you, the public, about the views of non-theists, to advocate for the rights of freethinkers. We have over 40,000 mainly non-religious members, and to keep religion out of government. And that is really our primary concern these days. And we have a team of attorneys, and we are working very hard to buttress that wall of separation between church and state. And you can find out more about joining the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org.
And we're going to talk about banned books today in the second half of our show. Our guest will be the Colorado activist Rob Rogers, who is making headlines by insisting that if schools are going to ban books, then the Bible should be one of those books.
And it looks like Rob and FFRF have prevailed, at least temporarily. The school district has agreed that the same criteria that apply to other books likewise applies to the Bible. Now, they're not banning the Bible. It looks like we'll tell you more about that when we interview Rob.
And after we talk with Rob, then we're going to remember James Haught, the editor emeritus of the Charleston Gazette in West Virginia, who was a longtime FFRF member and a regular contributor to our Free Thought Now blog. Jim Haught died Sunday at the age of 91.
Yes, he was an amazing person. We're going to miss him, and we're going to miss his blogs, although we have a few. He kept writing right to the end, and we have a few still that we'll be able to publish. And speaking of things that FFRF publicizes, We Dissent is a legal affairs podcast for atheists, agnostics, and humanists, or anybody interested in the law and separation of church and state, from the viewpoint of secular women lawyers. It's a collaboration of the Freedom From Religion Foundation and American Atheists. The newest episode, called A Supreme Mess, takes a deep dive into what some may indeed call a supreme mess as the Supreme Court continues to mess up civil rights for everyone.
And during this latest show, FFRF's legal director, Rebecca Markert, and FFRF attorney, Liz Cavell, discuss two recent Supreme Court opinions. Let's listen into their conversation about the recent Groff decision that now expands religious privilege in the workplace.
And of course, what we haven't talked about is obviously the impact that this would have on non-religious employees. They are probably going to suffer the brunt of a lot of these accommodation requests and will have to cover a lot of these shifts and not receive the accommodations that some of their religious counterparts are receiving.
Right, which is a fair point, because as Justice Alito is mentioning in the Establishment Clause context, and he's not wrong, how far could Congress go favoring religionists in the workplace, right? Like, they couldn't pass a law that says Christians make more money than atheists. So where are we on the slope of that when it comes to favorable treatment in accommodations and in the rules of the workplace? And of course, they're right. Atheists and non-religious workers have no such access to accommodations that might be coming from a place of like deep moral conviction for us, but aren't characterized as religious needs. And that's not really contemplated by Title VII, and that raises serious issues and just further kind of expands that divide between religious and non-religious workers in the workplace.
Past episodes of We Dissent are available at their website. Or on Spotify or wherever your podcasts are found. And you can stay up to date with the We Dissent podcast on Facebook and Twitter. And if you're an FFRF member, we also send out a notice with each monthly podcast. And this one is a bonus.
And there's some good news in the surveys.
Yes. We are cheering the fact that there is a declining belief in gods, devils, angels, heaven, hell. And my mother, Angela, the principal founder of Freedom from Religion Foundation, would have been so pleased, because she's the one who coined a motto that we use, especially at the winter solstice, to challenge religious displays in public places. There are no gods, no devils, no angels, no heaven or hell. There is only our natural world. Religion is but myth and superstition that hardens hearts and enslaves minds. And it turns out that belief in God has declined from 90% to 74%. Now, 12% don't believe, 14% aren't sure. Belief in the devil's dropped from 70% back in 2001 to 58% today. Belief in angels has decreased from 79% to 69%. Belief in heaven's gone from 83% back in 2001 to 67% present. And belief in hell's declined from 71% to 59%. And I have to say, this belief in angels is a little bit perplexing.
Huh.
But we are very glad to see, you know, Gallup tends to be more conservative, and this is amazing changes, and we are seeing so many more people, I think, using reason in forming their opinion about religion instead of faith and tradition and authority. So well done, nuns, N-O-N-E-S, the non-religious.
Last week, we reported a very good action by the governor of Guam in vetoing a bad bill that permitted taxpayer-funded religious charter schools in that territory. Well, the Senate in Guam just overrode her veto. And she had said that, "I can't sign a law that authorizes tax dollars to sponsor the establishment of religious schools, even if it teaches my religion. State actors and governmental entities, Guam's charter schools must respect the Constitution and the Organic Act of Guam, which clearly prohibit public schools from discriminating based on religion." So it's distressing news. We're complaining about that Senate override of her veto.
Yeah, and if you live in Guam, let us know, because we may have a lawsuit on the way. And it's a very predominantly Catholic country, and this is a move by the Catholic Church to get all of its parochial schools paid for by you, the taxpayers, where your children will be indoctrinated in the harsh rules of Catholicism, which are creating havoc in our country right now with anti-abortion laws. So it's really chilling to see that. And we are also disgusted with Oklahoma Superintendent Walters, Ryan Walters. We have been sending him now a fourth letter this year. He held a press conference in July, and he mangled that concept of religious freedom.
saying that there was an assault of religious liberty because officials at a Tulsa public school prohibited a school board member from praying. She prayed at the last graduation, and we and other people complained. And the school board did the right thing and said, no, we won't allow religious statements at graduation. So the superintendent, who is supposed to support secular public schools in Oklahoma, is taking retribution against the Tulsa public schools. He's threatening their accreditation. And this is just simply unacceptable, and we have called for his resignation. He is a frequent state church offender. We have written him multiple times and recently about many statements he made, such as saying that they're ending state-sponsored atheism, and he is promoting culture war tropes, saying that the Bible is a foundational document, the Bible is a foundational part of the Declaration of Independence. It is not. It's our Constitution is godless, and the Declaration is profoundly anti-biblical. It's the consent of the governed. He says that we fought World War II to make sure that we all know our rights come from God. Well, I wrote him a letter and said, my dad fought in World War II, and there were many atheists in foxholes, and they fought for true religious liberty, not to for you to impose your God on other people. So he's ineducable, but it is important to make a fuss. If you live in Oklahoma, complain.
So FFRF's Action Fund, which is our 501c4 branch, is condemning these political rallies that are doubling as Christian revivals. There's a whole bunch of Christian right-wing, Christian nationalist groups who are trying to turn all political rallies into a Jesus rally, and they are taking aim. They say there's a lot of people who love Trump but don't love Jesus, and they call them low-hanging fruit. They're trying to go to all of these political rallies and turn them into Jesus rallies, including this evangelist named Lance Wall now. Well, listen to what he said.
What would happen if the rallies became revivals? What if we came right up front and said the only hope for America isn't political? I don't care who your candidate is. You need God.
So last week, they held a Fire and Glory tour in Colorado, and that's where they announced that they're going to take this tour to battleground states because there's, as Dan said, that they say there's a lot of people that love Trump but don't know Jesus. And the America First Revival and Presidential Forum will take place in North Carolina, and that's where they're going to work with Turning Point USA, we've talked about them, and the National Faith Advisory Board that's run by Paula White, Trump's former spiritual advisor, and that's where they're going to fuse Christian revivalism with an outright political event. And this is in apparent violation of IRS tax codes. We'll be looking carefully at any churches that are involved in this event, but we can clearly see the hysterical rise of Christian nationalism in this fusion of religion and politics.
We want to thank the Right Wing Watch for informing us about some of these.
Yes, they do a good job. Now, a quick take on other news. Here in Wisconsin, the GOP leadership refuses to repeal an 1849 law that's now being used to ban all abortions in our state, except supposedly, and my emphasis is supposedly, to save a pregnant woman's life. It doesn't even have an exception for rape and incest. And we've mentioned that this law is being challenged, and we have a local judge saying that the law doesn't even ban abortion, voluntary abortion. It's meant to ban criminal conduct by an assailant who causes a miscarriage, but it's still in effect. So anyway, this law is being enforced. It's creating huge chaos and difficulty in Wisconsin. So guess what? Two Republican state legislators' idea of compassion is to introduce a bill saying people who become pregnant by sexual assault and give birth can go after rapists for child support. So this bill is about holding people accountable for their actions. It's a pro-life bill, says sponsor Senator Corey Tomczyk. So he would force, if he could, rape victims who become pregnant to carry an unwanted pregnancy to term and then say, oh, by the way, she can go to court and ask her assailant to pay child support for 18 years. Yeah, right. As if any survivor of sexual violence wants to be tied to that rapist for the rest of her life, not to mention making him angry and resentful, and not to mention that he belongs in prison and he presumably wouldn't be able to cough up any support. I mean, the whole thing is Alice in Wonderland, and it is not pro-life. In other disturbing news about what theocrats are doing to women, Amnesty International reports that Iran authorities have intensified a crackdown on women violating the Islamic Republic's strict dress codes. As you know, the death of Mahsa Amini, only 22, in September of last year, sparked months of street protests, with many women defying the rules that they must cover their heads. Many have died, men and women, young children, old people, during these protests or in custody since then. But for a time, the Iranian officials said they would stop the morality police patrols, but they're doubling down on car and foot patrols, and they're now enforcing compulsory veiling. They're reporting that a million women have received warnings that their vehicles will be confiscated if they're traveling in a car unveiled, and hundreds of businesses have been shut down. Women in Afghanistan have it even worse because the Taliban announced on Tuesday that all beauty salons in Afghanistan will close. This is one of the last sanctuaries for Afghan women. More than 60,000 were employed. They're already barred from education after grade school, from public places such as parks and gyms, working for international aid organizations. They are gender prisoners. And finally, a nod to Sinead O'Connor, 56, who died this week and was vilified back in 1992 when she appeared on SNL, ripping up a photo of Pope John Paul II as a stance against institutional abuse in the Roman Catholic Church, saying, "Fight the real enemy." Well done, Sinead O'Connor.
We're going to take a break, and after the break, Rob Rogers will explain why he asked Colorado schools to remove the Bible. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Don Argel, a life member of FFRS and promoter of Real Wellness Lifestyles. I'm no longer willing to say, "In God I trust, so help me God, God bless America," or pretend America is more under a God than any other nation. Join the resistance to Christian nationalism and politicians more attentive to what they think God wants than the needs of their constituents. Let's make separation of church and state a reality and turn back the drift to theocracy. Support FFRF. Our freedom really does depend on freethinkers.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. This last weekend was a big movie weekend, including the movie Barbie, which has been getting some very interesting reviews.
And I curse in the name of the Lord this new Barbie movie that has been released, full of transsexual and transgender and homosexuality. In the name of the Lord, make God loose a judge, God loose a holy judgment.
That was the evangelist Kent Christmas with his very enlightened review of the movie Barbie.
Well, and there's all kinds of them. Ginger Gates, or Getz, who's the wife of the Christian nationalist U.S. Representative Matt Getz, tweeted out this criticism: "The 2023 Barbie movie unfortunately fails to address any notion of faith or family. She's one of many Christian conservatives or extremists attacking the movie. And now we have Chris Lyne, FFRF staff attorney, here to talk about the movie, which he saw last week, I'm waiting to see it still, inspiring him to write a blog for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, entitled, Go See Barbie, A Counterpoint to the Tired Religious Hysteria. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Chris.
Hey, thank you.
So, and by the way, we're going to be talking in the next segment about one of your more recent victories, so congratulations on that in advance.
You.
So I'm taking my daughter to Barbie this weekend, but you went last weekend and you wrote a great blog. Tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. The impetus for me writing it, the reason I decided, was I did see a Christian review of the film called warning, don't take your daughter to Barbie. and I immediately knew, I already knew before I saw the movie, it was one of the biggest marketing campaigns of any movie probably of all time. Like, I mean, it was just everywhere. It was unavoidable. But I think it struck my interest is in their view, they did say, basically they said the movie was going to fail. They said millions of families would have turned out to the theater and purchased tickets, but instead Mattel chose to cater to a small percentage of the population who's proven over and over to abandon the box office. Movie Guide's 40 years of research indicates that Mattel has made a grievous mistake. Well, despite the grievous mistake of not catering to like a Christian conservative audience, the film grossed a record-breaking $155 million domestically. It's the biggest film debut of 2023 and the biggest opening weekend ever for a film directed by a woman.
Yes.
And so that was why I decided to write the blog and seeing the warped misunderstanding of a Christian thinking, oh, this movie can't possibly succeed if it's not about Jesus, you know.
Well, can I ask you, Chris, you went to the movie, you were one of those tickets.
Yeah.
Was the theater just full of 8-year-old girls and their moms?
No, it was a lot of older people. It was a lot of people wearing pink.
Huh?
Pretty much everybody, I was not, but a lot of pink and just very, I don't know, it's just very fun. It was a really fun movie.
Called it subversive.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you know, it definitely tackles a lot of gender topics. I think that you would have to be a little bit out of your mind to believe that this is in any way sort of like anti-man or like derogatory towards men or anything.
But it does have a feminist message.
Right, of course, but obviously a feminist message is not the same as anti-man, but I think that's where the misconception is coming from, that somehow anything about empowering women is somehow a negative to men or something. I think that's what a lot of the far
right... Well, unless you are one of those men who would feel that way, right?
Well, obviously those Christian evangelicals feel threatened.
Yeah. And as to sort of the outrage about, you know, the transgender stuff in the film, I don't remember, and I feel bad-ish about this, I don't remember the transgender, it wasn't enough of part of the movie for me to even know, I have no idea who that was. Like, so it was not, clearly not a theme of the movie for sure, and obviously these people saying this didn't see the movie, so they don't know at all.
But in your blog review, you say the movie follows Margot Robbie's stereotypical Barbie, who suddenly, stricken with worries about mortality, leaves the matriarchal utopia of Barbie Land in search of self-discovery in the real world, and then Ryan Gosling's Ken is tagging along for the ride, and doesn't he decide that he wants to become a male supremacist at some point?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of,
so that's
without too much
spoiling
the movie, yeah, it's that in the real world, he sees that, oh, the real world is very patriarchal, which juxtaposes with his life in this matriarchal world, and he kind of goes in a very slapstick, humorous way, you know, not in a way that anyone would take as, you know, being derogatory towards men. It's very funny, very light, it's good. I mean, I think most people would enjoy it unless you went in there trying to have an issue with
it.
So
you're saying it's not necessarily a free thought movie, but since it's really angering the religious right, maybe we ought to go see it. Huh?
Right, and there are actually some slight religious themes in it. You know, Greta Gerwig herself was... raised as a Unitarian Universalist, but went to Catholic school. She doesn't affiliate with a specific religion. I do believe she is religious, so I don't know that she's like a nun necessarily, but certainly has a much different take and not a strict conservative view of religion. And there are religious elements in the film. She plays with those in her movies quite a bit.
Well, I was not a big fan of Barbie when I was growing up, and I thought, what's all this hype about? But now that I see... there's a feminist theme and the evangelicals are all very mad. I'm very interested to go see this movie.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out. I'm glad that you'll be going. And I think everyone should go see the movie and figure out for themselves what the message is and understand.
Yeah, and have a, let's give some more money to a movie directed by a feminist woman that is angering Christian evangelicals. Mm.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's a good blog. The blog appears on FFRF's freethoughtnow.org blog if any of you listeners want to learn more about his wonderful writing.
Thank you.
So we're going to take a break, and after the break, we're going to talk with the Colorado activist Rob Rogers, telling us about his campaign in Colorado Springs to ban Bibles from schools to protest book banning. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, working to keep state and church separate. And here at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, we think banning books is a bad idea. But if schools are going to ban books for sex and obscenity, shouldn't the Bible be included? Our guest today thinks so. Rob Rogers is a U.S. Air Force veteran. He is a business agility consultant. He's the first vice chair of the El Paso County, Colorado Democrats. And his work for secularism has generated a lot of press recently when he opposed book banning in a Colorado Springs school district, suggesting that the Bible should be part of that ban.
Yeah, and the Freedom From Religion Foundation and Chris Lyne, who was just on our show, wrote a letter backing him up. And as we pointed out, there has been a recent victory. We'll let Rob talk more about that. Rob Rogers has lobbied with the Secular Coalition for America. He made a run for state representative in Colorado, all the while battling Christian nationalism. He's living in the hub of white Christian nationalism there in Colorado Springs. And we're delighted to have Mr. Rogers on the phone today from Colorado. Well, not that Mr. Rogers, but one who nevertheless cares about what happens in his neighborhood. And thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So first, what is it like living in Colorado Springs as a freethinker?
It can definitely be interesting. I happen to live in a community where a lot of the major Christian nationalist organizations are headquartered, including Focus on the Family, but maybe more significantly recently, it's also in close proximity to Andrew Womack's Truth and Liberty Coalition, which is starting to become one of the major organizational hubs for Christian nationalism. And I lived in the D.C. area for about 13 years and moved out here in 2018. And I knew that it was known as Evangelical NORAD, the spiritual Vatican, but I didn't really realize exactly how much influence that the city and the county was actually experiencing from those organizations. So it's definitely interesting.
So you're paying a pretty high price for that beautiful scenery, though, that you have around you.
that is true. I can walk out my front door and, you know, looking at Pikes Peak, you know, off in the distance, and that does pay some dividends, but it also makes it interesting with just there's plenty of opportunities to exercise my past experience with fighting for separation church and state.
Well, Rob, we're so glad you're there. And as a U.S. Air Force veteran, you know, you have some clout there to speak up. And tell us what's going on in the El Paso County schools there in Colorado Springs with book banning and how you got involved and what's happened.
This story really started back in 2021. Several of the school districts within El Paso County flipped to extremist conservative majority boards, and that was done with quite a bit of dark money. It was more of a dark money investment than many people in this area had seen. And a lot of the work started with just to find out where that money came from. And as we were doing that type of research, I worked with two or three other people on this kind of thing. And as we were doing research to try to find out where that money came from, we started discovering all of the Christian nationalist and church connections to various political aspects of things that we've been seeing within the county. And those conservative boards felt empowered after this. And it's really been nothing but a series of of fights and of actions on these boards, the counteractions on behalf of the more informed and progressive members of the community just to counter what they're doing. It's all just efforts of playing into the culture war that we're seeing on a national scale. Everything from fighting book bans, which always seems to have something to do with the LGBTQ community, to the introduction of religious aspects into the school system and promoted by these boards. So that's where it really all started. So we've been, there are several of us that have been fighting this and challenging these boards since November of 2021.
So when did the schools start pulling out? I believe they pulled out 4 books. Is that right? Is it only 4?
It was in this particular instance that just happened relatively recently. It was 4 different books. But there had been in my school district, which is Academy District 20, there had been 5 formal book challenges that have happened over the previous year. So there is a reconsideration policy that the school district has implemented for concerned parents who believe that, you know, certain educational material is problematic for whatever reason. And that process had been followed by a parental rights group that's adjacent to Moms for Liberty. They're the ones that initiated a lot of that. This most recent instance, though, the superintendent, who's now the former superintendent, he bypassed policy and made a unilateral decision to have these books removed at the request of the same parental rights group.
So,
and that's whenever we realized that, okay, they just opened the door for another type of challenge, which is where, and I've been watching some of the things that have been going on in Utah and Florida as well, and that's where I got the idea of using that same criteria and justification to ask for equal treatment to have the Bible removed as well.
Well, yes, and we're so glad you did. And just to talk about some of the books that were banned and how they compare to the Bible, one of them is, Alice Siebold's book. Now I've forgotten the name of it. It's a memoir about being a rape victim.
Right.
And when you compare the Bible to this book, the Bible has all of these instructions to rape women as war booty or... in many circumstances, it doesn't even really acknowledge rape, or it says rape victims have to marry their rapist. Which do you want in a school library?
Hmm.
And then there's the book by Sapphire that was turned into the movie Precious, which is a sympathetic, it's a wrenching portrayal of an incest victim. And when you compare what the Bible says about incest, you know, this libel that Lot's daughters seduced him, so that virgins, so they'd have his babies after Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, what do you want kids reading? So we are so glad that you started that complaint. And then tell us what's happened.
So whenever the initial request was made to have those 4 books removed, it was one of the most rapid responses that I've ever seen to anything being requested of our school district. It happened within a matter of days. We were also able to file the Colorado version of a Freedom of Information Act request to get the email exchanges between that parents group and the superintendent. And not only did everything happen very fast, it was also very friendly, which was also interesting. So in my request, I asked for the same treatment. I asked for the same timeline. If that request could be made and could be responded to so quickly, then so could mine. And I didn't get a response at all, complete radio silence from the school district for 32 days. And it was only after Chris Line and FFRF got involved and sent your letter to the school district that they actually started responding. And the initial response was from the legal specialist. Also indicated they were going to be taking a couple of weeks to evaluate the situation, which I also did not find equitable, and I let them know that too. And then they responded sooner than their deadline with the news that all of the books that had been removed that did not follow the established policy for book reconsideration and challenges would be put back on the shelves, which is exactly what I wanted. If they were going to use some kind of a unilateral decision process to remove books, then that had to be applied to all books that met the criteria that was used to remove those initial four books. And they didn't, evidently they didn't want to go down the path of removing the Bible. They wanted to follow their policy, so they're going to be putting them all back, which was a win. It was,
yes.
I take that as a good success.
Absolutely. Congratulations. So this is applying to the four most recently removed books?
That's the only ones that have been removed. The five formal challenges that have happened in the previous over the previous year, none of those were successful.
Ah.
So none of those have been removed. They were actually appealed to the superintendent and then appealed to the school board. And even though our school board has a majority of what I would consider these extremist conservative members, they still could not justify removing books. Because when you're evaluating this, you have to consider the work as a whole, not cherry pick specific passages in order to prove something is obscene or pornographic. You have to look at the context of the entire work. And they couldn't do that, so they didn't remove any of the books. And there were several other books that they wanted to challenge, and the emails that we saw between the parents' rights group and the superintendent indicated that the process was too lengthy, and that's what it really seemed like. They wanted a way of bypassing the time that it took to formally challenge books.
They'd have to read all of those books, actually, in context, wouldn't they?
And when they established these formal processes, a local committee is first formed at the school where the book is being challenged. It's made up of parents and teachers and administrators. It's supposed to be an unbiased group, and they have to read the entire book, and then they vote on whether or not to remove it. So it is a lengthy process that is expensive.
Well, I think it's a great victory. It doesn't mean it's over, I suppose, but if you're going to have a policy, it has to be even-handed, and you can't have one policy for other books and another for the Bible. So you've really, it's a major, major victory, especially there in Colorado Springs.
Well, also, it's a way to advertise the fact that the Bible itself is not really a good book. Maybe if we get people to actually look at it, there'll be more atheists in the world.
Like you just mentioned, this is likely not over. They will likely just go through processes for a lot of these books, and we are already prepared for that. You know, at the first moment that, you know, one of these formal challenges is issued, and we will just issue a formal challenge about the Bible.
Right. Yeah.
And hopefully that will point out to some people, because I'm assuming that they're going to have to read the entire book. And I'm assuming and hoping that they will get exposed to some things about the Bible that they might not know.
It takes a really long time to read the Bible.
But people should read it. We advocate people should read it to see what's in it.
Turned a lot of people into atheists.
Yeah.
Well, and it's so important that you are there, because this requires people with, you know, parents with children in schools or people who live in the community to complain when they bring on these book banning policies. So people who are listening, you've got some sway in your community if this is going on, if they are starting to ban books in your community and they are not banning the Bible. And we would be happy to work with anyone in wherever you live on a campaign like this.
Well, thank you so much, Rob Rogers, for all your activism and your work. And I think it's kind of ironic that this group is called Moms for Liberty. They want to limit what people can read. So thank you for all your work to keep state and church separate and to educate the public about the fact that we secularists are here and we're alive and well, and we're not going to let them just take over our country.
Our democracy is only as strong as our willingness to defend it. So I feel obligated to do so, and I really appreciate FFRF's help, and thanks for having me on today.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to remember James Haught. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hello. This is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I am Dan Barker. Welcome back.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're sorry to report the death of a longtime FFRF member and a national advocate for free thought, James Haught. Jim Haught died last Sunday, July 23rd, at the age of 91 in West Virginia. He was the editor of the Charleston Gazette for, I think, 4 decades or more. The author of 12 books, more than 100 magazine articles, a prominent humanist and atheist, and a regular contributor to FFRF's Free Thought Now blog, and he also represented FFRF last year in our secular voter campaign. We had one representative or couple for every state and pictured in front of their state capitol, and although it was hard for him, at 90 he went over there and got his picture taken and was in a full-page ad in the Charleston Gazette, promoting the Freedom From Religion Foundation and secular voter values.
Was he on a billboard too?
No, he wasn't.
In 2008, Jim Haught was interviewed on West Virginia television by Gordon Simmons about one of his books. Here's a part of that interview where he's talking about religion.
Well, you were one of the first reporters to actually deal with the snake handling churches that have since become a more documented thing.
Yeah, back in the 60s, I believe it was, people would say there are snake handlers out in the mountains, and people would say, no, you're talking about the 1920s. They don't still exist. And then someone phoned me or something and said, no, they're still handling rattlesnakes up at Gauley Bridge. So I got on the phone, and I found the leader of that church. And he was a very nice, gentle man and said, oh, Mr. Haught, be sure to come up and visit us and bring your camera and take our pictures.
And he did.
So I drove up to Gauley Bridge and went to this little church up in Scrabble Creek, and they brought out the big rattlesnakes, and all of them picked them up, and they speak in the unknown tongue. And once I found the snake handlers and took all the pictures and put them in the paper, that started a kind of a wave of interest, and different television stations would send camera crews there. And a sociologist over at UC, Dr. Nathan Girard, began to study them as a phenomenon, a cultural situation. And I remember he gave a psychological test to all the members of the Snake Handler Church. And then for a control group, he also gave it to a Methodist church up in Montgomery. But the snake handlers came out mentally healthier
than the Methodists.
than the mainline church people. So,
well,
and Dr. Girard didn't want me to print that, but he revealed it in a scholarly journal somewhere once, and the cat was out of the bag.
It's pretty funny. In 2018, Jim Haught was a guest on this show. And let's remember Jim by hearing some of his remarks during that Free Thought Radio interview.
I've been a skeptic all my life, and here I'm in the very heart of the Bible Belt, but nobody seems to notice. I don't know whether fundamentalists don't read newspapers. I can't understand it, but I always worried that I might damage the newspaper, but I didn't really try to hide my scientific, honest beliefs, and it never caused any trouble so far. And I'm now pretty much retired, kind of 90% retired, and I still keep pounding my skeptic writing and as much as I can. So it's all working so far. I think every society around the world has a gulf between supernatural believers, people who think invisible gods and devils and heavens and hells are real, and scientific-minded skeptics like us who want actual evidence. And research shows that the skeptics have higher intelligence than the supernatural believers do. So luckily, the skeptics are winning in modern Western democracies. Ever since the Enlightenment, doubters have gained ground and religion has retreated. After World War II, religion just sort of disintegrated in Europe. And that's very ironic because Europe spent centuries killing people for religion in the Crusades and Inquisitions and witch hunts and Reformation wars and pogroms against Jews and massacres of Anabaptists and so forth. And then all at once, Europe just decided that religion was utterly insignificant. I've had a very long and colorful life, and it's now drawing toward a close. Good thing about being a skeptic, you don't fear death coming. I can see my future pretty well. It's not a bright future, but I don't have any frantic wishes about going to heaven or continuing some kind of life after death. I think you're personality is created by your brain, and when your brain dies, that's the end of your personality, far as I know.
Notice that Jim did not say when you pass on, thankfully. He said when your brain dies. Jim Haught may have died, but his thoughts do live on in the many books he wrote and in the 160 articles he wrote for FFRF's Free Thought Now blog. And I think Dan mentioned we're fortunate that we still have some new fresh articles by Jim, so he'll continue to live on. We'll be posting some in the next few weeks, but I do want to call everyone's attention to his farewell column. We posted it yesterday on freethoughtnow.org, My Thoughts on Mortality. We reprinted his poignant remarks when he was 90 about mortality, in which he said, I have no fear of death. It's simply the natural end of life. It awaits all 8 billion of us. Nobody can escape it. For now, I'll just keep flailing away, writing as well as I can until it becomes impossible. We science-minded people are confident that no heaven or hell lurks hereafter. Every human, he talked about the personality of his brain, the brain dying. Then he said, here's a reason I feel inner peace about my approaching end. Our secular humanist cause has won hundreds of victories during my 9 decades, and I have a wishful faith that it will continue to win after I'm gone. And in Jim Haught's memory, and for the future of our planet, all of us have to double down on our work to promote free thought and keep religion out of government.
James A. Haught died Sunday at the age of 91. That's our show for today. We want to say hello to listeners in Philadelphia, WOOM, in Bryn Mawr, WZML, in Madison, Wisconsin, WIDE, and WMUU, in Janesville, Wisconsin, the WADR, in Bryan, Texas, KEOS, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, Bellows Falls, Vermont, WOOL, Kingston, Rhode Island, WRIU, and Ithaca, Watkins Glen, New York, WRFI. So if you want to know more about Free Thought Radio, go to ffrf.org/radio.
Yes, ask for more information at ffrf.org or join us. And if you ask for info, there's a click ask for info link on our homepage. You will get a complimentary issue of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. It's 24 pages of excellent summaries of everything that's going on in State Church and Free Thought and acquainting you with our community. And we invite you to tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join us and the world.
Chagrin, mes plaisirs, je n'ai plus besoin de balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien, car ma vie.
Campaign line was Save Jones, Welcome to the World, and we really strive to create a really inclusive, welcoming and warm atmosphere for all of our Pride visitors.
It's amazing. It's very entertaining.
We love having a bit of colour on Market Street. It's glorious.
I love it so much.
One of Australia's biggest department stores is getting in on the action.
Yes. Yes, supporting the World Pride.
We're holding a Drag Queen Bible Story Hour.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Ghana's top court rejects a challenge to a horrific anti-queer bill. Italy's far-right government erases lesbian co-moms. And a Sydney chain store puts its pride in the window. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Elena Botkin-Levy.
And I'm Brian DeShazer.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 22nd, 2023. The Supreme Court of Ghana has rejected an effort to stop Parliament's current consideration of a horrific anti-queer bill. According to the unanimous decision issued on July 19th by the High Court's 9-member bench, "We have considered the merits of this case and are of the considered view that a prima facie case has not been made to convince us to injunct the work of Parliament." The measure has been percolating since August 2021. It would punish advocacy for LGBTQ rights with up to 10 years in prison. Public displays of same-gender affection or cross-dressing could lead to a fine or jail time under the law, which would also criminalize certain types of medical support for transgender people. Even queer supportive content in the media would be banned. Citizens would be required to report neighbors they suspect of being LGBTQ. Outed queer people would be forced into conversion therapy, the phony method of changing sexual orientation. The West African nation's top religious leaders and most politicians strongly back the enhanced restrictions. Ghana already punishes private adult consensual same-gender sex with up to 3 years in prison. The lawsuit was just a pit stop on the way to the bill's almost certain passage. Now the way is clear for Ghana's parliament to wrap up debate and vote on the bill, then send it to President Nana Akufo-Addo for his signature. He'll probably sign it despite his reported concerns about its constitutionality.
Kenya's parliament has its own draconian anti-queer bill to consider. The Family Protection Act would outlaw identifying as LGBTQ or promoting queer rights. It would ban pride marches, drag shows, rainbow flags, even rainbow-colored clothes could land a person a minimum of 10 years in prison. Private consensual adult same-gender sex is already against the law in the East African nation. Under the proposed legislation, a same-gender sex conviction could mean at least 14 years behind bars. The measure also outlaws gender-affirming health care for trans people. The bill mirrors the Anti-Homosexuality Act neighboring Uganda enacted earlier this year, the Kill the Gays law that punishes aggravated homosexuality with execution. In Kenya's version, that's defined as same-gender sex acts with a minor or disabled person and transmitting a terminal disease through sexual means. Recent public opinion polls found 83% of Christian and Muslim respondents saying that their faith rejects homosexuality. They believed society should not accept same-gender sex. Kenya's President William Ruto has not commented publicly about the proposed legislation. Earlier this year, he said, "Our culture and religion does not allow same-gender marriages." Elsewhere in Africa, lawmakers in Tanzania and South Sudan are also considering anti-queer proposals, according to Pink News.
In Italy, the names of non-biological lesbian mothers are being disappeared from their children's birth certificates. Recently installed far-right Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni announced in March that state agencies were henceforth forbidden from registering the children of same-gender couples. Now the government is retroactively deleting them. Viola and Michaela Leidi were among the first recipients of letters informing them that Michaela's name would be removed from the birth certificate of Viola's biological daughter. Michaela told the Daily Mail that she cried for 10 days. She said, "It was as if I did not exist." Vanessa Fineso and Christina Zambone used Zambone's egg for in vitro fertilization in Spain, and Fineso gave birth. Despite the use of Zambone's egg, she's no longer being listed as the co-parent on their child's birth certificate, according to the letter the couple received. To make matters worse, Zambone has cancer and worries that if she dies, Fineso will lose custody of their daughter if she's not legally identified as the co-parent. That's just two of the 27 families with 33 children in the city of Padua alone that have been notified so far. Mayor Sergio Giordani is defying the federal government. He's ordered relevant city agencies to continue to issue birth certificates to families headed by two mothers. Equally defiant, Viola and Michaela Leidi said, "On paper, they say our daughter has one mother, but we know she has two. We will do everything possible to prove we are a good family."
A diplomatic tiff is straining the otherwise solid relationship between Jamaica and the United States. The Caribbean island nation is refusing to grant a diplomatic immunity to the husband of a newly appointed gay U.S. diplomat. That's normally a routine courtesy. The U.S. has responded by refusing the equally routine extension of the 5-year diplomatic visas of three Jamaican diplomats working at their country's U.S. embassy and consulates. They've been ordered to leave the U.S. as soon as their visas expire. The government in Kingston has thus far refused to respond to Washington's concerns. U.S. State Department spokespeople have generally tried to downplay the rift. A senior Jamaican government official told Radio Jamaica that accrediting the same-gender spouse of the U.S. diplomat would require the recognition of a same-gender couple's marriage. Same-gender love is culturally and legally condemned in Jamaica, and marriage equality is perhaps decades away. A State Department statement stressed, "One of our top priorities is to ensure that privileges and immunities are granted to spouses of personnel assigned to U.S. embassies and consular posts, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity." If the apparent stalemate continues, the country's ambassador to the U.S., Audrey Marks, and its Miami-based Consul General Oliver Mayer are among Jamaican diplomats who would have to leave the U.S. this year.
The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit has approved a Roman Catholic school's firing of an educator after school officials discovered that she was married to another woman. Administrators at Indianapolis, Indiana area Roncalli High School refused to renew the contract of Michelle Shelley Fitzgerald in 2018. She had worked at the school for 14 years and had advanced into guidance counseling. She had been married for 4 years when she was terminated. Her case has been moving up the judicial ladder ever since. The U.S. Supreme Court's Bostock decision in 2020 established non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ people in the workplace. However, the High Court carved out an exception for faith-based employers. Fitzgerald's attorney argued that her duties didn't involve religious instruction. The opinion of the three-judge panel of the Chicago-based Seventh Circuit insists that she played a crucial role on the administrative council, which was responsible for at least some of Roncalli's daily ministry, education, and operations. Attorneys from the group Americans United for Separation of Church and State were part of Fitzgerald's legal team, and they criticized the Seventh Circuit's conclusions. Their media statement asserted, "Shelley Fitzgerald, like most employees at religious organizations, wasn't hired to minister to students or to preach the Catholic religion. She was hired to provide secular guidance to students seeking to get into college. She should not have lost her civil rights simply because the secular work she performed was done at a religious school." It's unclear at this point if Fitzgerald will appeal.
Finally,
we're holding a Drag Queen Bible Story Hour.
That's Reverend Victor Floyd of the San Francisco Bay Area Calvary Presbyterian Church, speaking with local TV station KYMA. The historic church's Drag Queen Bible Story Hour was during a Pride Month Sunday service in June. A drag queen read scripture and a singing drag queen entertained the congregation, which critics noted also included families with children. The church celebrated on its Facebook page, posting, "What a gift it was to have Joanne Fabrics, a.k.a. the Rev. at San Francisco Treat, Flamey Grant at Flamey Grant, and Christian inclusivity advocate, the Reverend Jane Spar, with us this afternoon. We thank God for the great diversity present in the world and hold to the truth that each and every one of us is created in God's image and loved by God. For the gift of drag queens, O God, we give you thanks." Calvary Presbyterian was founded in July of 1854, and it's included in the United States National Registry of Historic Places. Congregants generally ignored a small but rowdy group of protesters who appeared at a subsequent Sunday service. Reverend Floyd told KYMA-TV why Calvary Presbyterian chose to host its Drag Queen Bible Story Hour.
"We're hoping to offer a little balance to all of the hateful rhetoric that's out in the country, and especially coming from churches and from politicians who are using churches and using trans people and drag queens as their props."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending July 22nd, 2023. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Elena Botkin-Levy. Stay healthy.
And I'm Brian DeShazer. Stay safe.
We're gonna work for change together. Work for change together. Work for change together. Never turning back. Never turning back.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter,
email us at info@thiswayout.org,
and through your financial contributions to our program.
More information and a link to give are online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Large corporations know they might be taking their sales in their hands if they come out to support the LGBTQ community. There's no way a major retailer would have even hinted their approval of a pride celebration in the early days. Companies eventually learned that showing some pride serves the public and the bottom line. But today the pendulum may be swinging in a dangerous direction. In the U.S., threatening boycotts by white Christian nationalists nearly forced Target and Kohl's chain stores to pull their queer displays and Pride season attire. Woolworth's South Africa has also been experiencing a backlash over its Pride promotion. However, David Jones, one of Australia's biggest department store chains, really rocked World Pride earlier this year, as Sydney correspondent Barry Mackay discovered.
One of Australia's preeminent department stores, David Jones, has been in business since 1838 and is the world's longest continuously running department store. During World Pride earlier this year, David Jones joined in with the fun and hosted various World Pride events at their Sydney stores. I'm standing outside the David Jones flagship store on the corner of Market and Elizabeth Streets in central Sydney, watching a self-confident, bearded Samoan drag queen in a long, flowing, open-legged, sparkling pink dress, sporting a large feathered fan alongside a young acrobatic performer juggling in the store display window. What do you think of the show here today?
Oh, it's nice to see some activation in the David Jones window that's all inclusive.
Yeah?
I've always been a fan of the window displays, and this is just something new and something exciting. I love that David Jones has jumped on board and they support inclusivity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a good step in the right direction.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hi, what do you think of the show today?
Oh, amazing, thank you. Beautiful.
What do you think of the show here today?
Oh, look, I think it's fantastic. You got to hand it to them, they got balls.
What do you think of the show here today?
Amazing. I love it so much.
What do you think of the show?
Oh, here? It's fabulous. We love having a bit of colour on Market Street. It's glorious. Yeah.
It's very different for David Jones to do this sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, David Jones should be inclusive, you know.
Happy World Pride.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I spoke with Ross Sabatini, an executive with the department store, over Skype, about David Jones's long association with the Sydney gay and lesbian Mardi Gras. He told me that queer icon Carlotta, one of Sydney's most famous transgender performers back in the 1960s, when she was part of what was then known as a female impersonator revue called Les Girls in Sydney's King's Cross, helped one year with designing display windows during the Mardi Gras celebrations. Was Carlotta a part of David Jones before she became a Les Girls star?
Correct, yes. So when she was young, back in the 60s, she was one of our window dressers, and she attributes her her fabulous taste and style to David Jones.
That's fantastic, fantastic. Why did David Jones make the decision to take part in the Sydney World Pride celebrations this year?
So David Jones decided to be part of it because, first of all, we've been celebrating Mardi Gras for a long time. And World Pride being in Sydney and in the southern hemisphere of the world for the first time is a really big reason for us to celebrate and take part in it. We know that around 500,000 people are going to participate in the celebrations, whether they're, you know, locals, whether they work in our stores, whether they're our shoppers or international visitors. We wanted to make a big deal of World Pride this year and really celebrate our allyship with the LGBTQIA plus SB community.
Hi, what did you think of the performance today?
It was amazing. Really, really good.
Yeah,
excellent, yeah.
Where are you from?
Ireland.
Ireland?
Yeah, yeah.
You hit World Pride?
I'm here, hopefully for good.
Oh, for good?
Yeah, yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
What do you think of David Jones getting in on the action this year?
Brilliant. You know, it's good to see a bit of inclusion from big brands.
Yeah. What has been an offer to the public in store here in Sydney to see during Sydney World Pride?
So at David Jones, we love putting on a show, and of course Pride is the best reason to put on a show for our visitors. So this year we had incredible performances in our Elizabeth Street and Bondi stores. So think burlesque performers, all sorts of sword-swallowing acts, dancers, and amazing DJs throughout different levels throughout our stores. We also had some of our staff dress up for the occasion and parade around the store and create some really amazing content. And of course, our iconic piano player, Michael Hope, was playing some pretty great show tunes on the piano for everyone to really enjoy.
You're one of the models here today. What's the reaction been?
They're all very excited to see us, very happy that we're supporting Pride.
Can you tell me a little bit about your outfit?
It's a rainbow-coloured morph suit with the David Jones print, dress and hat.
Yeah, I
think everyone's really happy to see that David Jones is in support of Pride.
Yeah. So you're one of the DJs here at David Jones?
I'm a DJ at DJs.
What's the reaction been from the public?
Well, I think people come here expecting a little bit of glamour and luxury, and they get that with a splash of colour today. So I think the disco vibes and the extra performers just give it that extra touch.
What sort of performance have you had here today?
We've had some beautiful drag artists, and I don't know, how would you describe the dancers that were here before? They were in the classic houndstooth outfit, but with a rainbow bodysuit. It was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and it's good to see everybody showing support.
Absolutely, getting behind it. You know, I think what's fantastic is, you know, it's not lots of people here for it, so that's what's most important.
Happy World Pride.
Happy World Pride.
Thank you. I personally saw the drag queen in the shop window in Elizabeth Street, and she was going down really, really well with the public outside. They were really enjoying the show.
That's great. Yeah, I think, you know, maybe a few people could have been surprised to see some of these performers in our windows. It's different to what you'd normally see when you walk past our David Jones windows, but the response we've had has been phenomenal. And it's so great to see such a joyous response, and some amazing feedback has been delivered to our staff as well. I think one of the favourite things about our stores during Pride was our musical playlist. So throughout our network of stores across Australia, we created a Pride playlist that featured all the divas, all the Pride classics and anthems, and you know, we literally had people dancing in the aisles throughout the Pride season. So that was great to see.
Hi, you're one of the dancers today. What sort of reaction are you getting?
Positive reaction. Everyone's up for a celebration.
Yeah.
Generally, if they're not, they just keep walking.
What do you think about David Jones doing this for the first time?
It's awesome. I think it's really important that big organisations like DJs get behind basic human nature, which is about being visible and celebrating one another.
What feedback have you had from those on the shop floor in Sydney from the public to the models and the decorations that you had in store?
Yeah, again, it's been such an incredible, overwhelming response. I think there's a sense of joy, which, you know, obviously that sense overtook Sydney as a whole, but really sort of was reflected in our stores. You know, we created incredible rainbow installations. There were lots of mirror balls throughout the stores. We created these giant groups of glitter fruit as well. So really, it was quite a joyful response from our customers and our staff as well. That teamed in with the incredible musical playlist. Yeah, it was such a great moment to be celebrated in stores.
I noticed in your Elizabeth Street store in Sydney, you had like a rainbow path right through many of the shop floors.
Yeah, that's right. You know, obviously it's all about the rainbow. So we wanted to really amplify that throughout the store and create these really sort of beautiful welcoming cards throughout the store. Our campaign line was Save Jones Welcomes the World, and we really strive to create a really inclusive, welcoming and warm atmosphere for all of our Pride visitors.
It's amazing. It's very entertaining, actually.
Are you here for World Pride?
I am here for World Pride.
Where are you from?
From Melbourne.
From Melbourne?
Yeah.
Is this a good thing that David Jones is doing this, do you think?
Yeah, it's cool. Like, even the mannequins are supporting the World Pride event, so yeah. It's really, really cool.
It's great.
It's great. It's very entertaining. Like, I'm here to watch them, so...
Yeah. One of Australia's biggest department stores is getting in on the action.
Yes. Yeah, supporting the World Pride.
Happy
it's
World
cool.
Pride.
Happy World Pride, thank you.
Lastly, can you tell me about David Jones's policy of inclusivity in its workforce?
Absolutely. So at David Jones, we're focused on building a thriving culture. So we really champion diversity in people and ideas and make sure that we allow them to reach their full potential by really embracing this sense of diversity. We've also recently signed the Australian Retail Association LGBT plus positioning statement with a few other Australian retailers, and this is really a commitment to support our LGBTQI team members and their allies. And interesting enough, you know, there's been a report saying that there's around 20% of retail workers identify as being part of the LGBTQI plus community. So it is really important that we embrace the community.
So David Jones really is an LGBTQIA plus ally in Australia.
Absolutely, absolutely. In everything we do, you know, from the creative side of things, whenever we're creating campaigns and photo shoots, we're always making sure that we're trying to support the communities. And, you know, we've been using trans models for years and all sorts of diverse models and talent photographers. So it's not just, you know, our staff, but it's also we want to make sure that we're supporting the community with our brand partners as well.
Back to the store window again, and I'm filming with my video camera. A tense moment as a heckler walks past, giving a questionable gesture with two fingers on both outstretched arms to our bearded Samoan drag queen, whose name is Fez. But Fez handles the situation gracefully, blows a kiss and waves at the passerby in question with a big smile, and the situation is easily diffused. 20 seconds later, Fez and her juggling companion break into a fit of good-humoured laughter. If you'd like to see my footage at the David Jones shop front window, just search for David Jones, Sydney World Pride 2023, Elizabeth Street on YouTube. I'm Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia for This Way Out.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, CEO of This Way Out Radio and Overnight Productions, Inc. This Way Out has been selected as one of the first-year collections for the Library of Congress National Recording Preservation Board Radio Preservation Task Force's new program, Sound Submissions. This means This Way Out programs will be preserved for future generations. You can help preserve the future of This Way Out. Email us at info@thiswayout.org to subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you for listening and for your support.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Elena Bacalivi and Brian DeShazer and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Barry Mackay. Judy Small, Billy Joel, Zrazy, The Presets, Bonnie Pointer, Sisser Sisters, Chaka Khan, Lizzo, and Donna Summer performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson, composer, performed our theme music.
This Way Out thanks the Jane and Deborah Cluey Charitable Fund and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Please join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media. Email us at info@thiswayout.org or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KMUD, Arcadia, Eureka, Laytonville, Garberville, and Shelter Cove, California, WDRT, Viroqua, Wisconsin, CJLY, Slocum Valley, New Denver, Nelson, and Crawford Bray, British Columbia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.